Thank you. We'll be doing the land acknowledgement before the open session at 5 o'clock. Also, we have the meeting norms. Great, thank you for that. And see, welcome, Dwayne. We need one more board member, and then we can go ahead with the roll call, and then we can move ahead with the public comment. If you'd like to make public comment about any of the closed session items, you can go ahead and put your name in the chat or raise your hand, and we will take you momentarily.
Josephine, if I may, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jason Miller from the Office of Young Men and Core, legal counsel for the charter school. My colleague Jason Rudolph is here this evening, and he's going to be helping support people in the chat. And we have the norms addressed or written, but I'd like if we can have Jason address the norms out loud as well, because this will be a different board meeting than we've had. We'll do this again at the beginning of open session.
Yes. Okay. So why don't we go ahead and do that? And why don't we have Jason address the norms now? It'll be a condensed version. And then when we go to the open session, we'll do the full version of the norms. So Jason, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Again, my name is Jason Rudolph, also an attorney with Young Men and Core. We represent the Oakland School for the Arts. Welcome to this meeting. Just want the members of the public to know that the board recognizes the importance of all stakeholder voices at the OSA. Collaboration and community are essential to the viability of our school. We want the folks to know that public comment may be made on topics that relate to the school. You can use the raised hand function to make public comment. If you can't do so at this time, you can do so in the chat. We want to be sure that we see all signups and provide an opportunity to meet at this meeting. Importantly, you are not required to include your name with the comment. If you wish to remain anonymous at this time, for the ease of identifying speakers, please provide a unique and appropriate pseudonym if you so desire. Importantly, particularly I think today, if due to student and employee privacy laws, please refrain from using the name or information that could imply the identity of any student or employee. And I also think here, for today in this closed session portion, again, we'll restate these at the beginning of open session. But please note, particularly as it relates to the chat, OSA has elected to keep that chat function open. We will be monitoring that. Staff will be looking at that as well and responding as best we can. Please note that board members cannot respond to chat questions or chat inquiries, but staff will do so to the best they can. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted on the website, at least the open session and public comment session. A closed session will not, but we can, I think, go ahead and proceed with the closed session.
Great, thank you for that, Jason. I'm gonna go ahead and do the roll call now, and I think move on to public comment if we have any, and we will announce additional board members when they join the meeting. So Adrian Barnes?
Here.
Thank you, Adrian. Dwayne Walton?
Oops, here.
Thank you, Dwayne. And I'm here, Josefina Alvarado Mena. I'm the chairperson of the board of OSA. So do we have any public comment? Okay, I do not think we have any public comment for this.
Sorry about that. I opened the breakout room and they all automatically moved there apparently.
Should I go ahead and pause the recording?
We'll say we have another 4 minutes to go from here. So our legal team, you both have very official looking backgrounds.
Yes, there was a lot of attention paid to that very early on to make sure that we weren't in our, you know, bedrooms or anything else.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Nobody wants to see their lawyers in their bedrooms.
No, no, they don't.
No, that doesn't instill confidence. Okay, we have another 3 minutes of public comment space. And Jason, for the roll call, I'm going to call your name. Jason Ryman.
Here.
Thank you. And I see Wai-Ling is joining us as well. As soon as she connects to the audio, I'll call her name out. Wai-Ling Huber?
Here.
Thank you, Wai-Ling. So we're just finishing up our public comment period. We had 5 minutes allocated, so we're doing the full 5 minutes, and then we're going to recess to the closed session. Almost there, about 1 minute left for public comment. Okay, there we go. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back after closed session. Now we need someone to move us to the breakout rooms.
Okay, I was wondering if you still had the ability to do that. Let me just try that again.
To start, thank you. Before we do the roll call, I just want to say that we are in a moment where we're called upon to support our students, families, staff, and community, and that we will proceed in a manner that addresses the humanity, dignity, and the due process rights of all parties involved. And at the heart of our work is our mission to create a safe and equitable learning environment. And with that, let me call the meeting to order. And also we will start with the roll call attendance. So Adrian Barnes.
Here.
Thank you, Adrian. Steve Borg.
Here.
Thank you. Wai-Ling Huber.
Here.
Thank you. Jason Ryman.
Here.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton.
Here.
Thank you, Dwayne. And we will proceed to the land acknowledgement. Romy, can you project that, please?
Yes, sorry, give me 1 second.
After we do the land acknowledgement, we're going to go over our meeting norms. You've already been introduced to Beth Roy, who will be assisting with the facilitation today. And we also have, let's go to the land acknowledgement. OSA is situated on Huchin, the unceded territories of the Chocheno-speaking Lasan Ohlone peoples who have lived upon this land since the beginning of time. Indigenous peoples in California, the Americas, and around the world are still here. OSA recognizes the historic genocide and ethnic cleansing inflicted upon Indigenous peoples in California and the Americas, including their forced removal from ancestral lands and the deliberate and systemic destruction of their communities and culture. These conditions are ongoing, and Indigenous people have been fighting against cultural erasure and for their sovereignty since the beginning of colonization. To this end, we as a community strive to honor the Indigenous members of our community, uplift their voices and contributions to arts and culture, center Indigenous people's worldviews in our classrooms, and support Indigenous sovereignty everywhere. This land acknowledgement is a small act in supporting Indigenous communities and centering the justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion work within the Oakland School for the Arts. Solidarity with Indigenous nations can include, number one, donating time and money to Indigenous-led organizations. Number two, amplifying the voices of Indigenous people, leading grassroots change movements. And number three, giving money. Before we go to the meeting norms, I neglected to announce that in closed session, we did take an action to enter into a lease for an additional facilities for OSA. Also, I neglected to mention that we have a new student board member that is with us today, and that is Daz. I do not see, let's see. Can you, there you are, Daz. Can you please just introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Daz. I'm the student body president at OSA.
Great, thank you so much, and welcome to the OSA board. So let's move on to the meeting norms. I want to introduce Jason Miller and Jason Rudolph. And Jason, both are with our council, and Jason Rudolph will be going over the meeting norms for this meeting. Jason?
Good evening. My name is Jason Rudolph. And as mentioned, I'm an attorney with the law firm of Young, Minnie, and Kaur, and on behalf of the Oakland School for the Arts, which I will refer to as OSA. I want to take a moment just to set forth a few meeting norms and guidelines, particularly as it relates to public comment and an available chat function that the OSA Board of Directors and staff have elected to make available during this meeting. Now, to start, the OSA Board of Directors recognizes the importance of all stakeholder voices at OSA. Collaboration and community are essential to the viability of the school. Now, the purpose of this meeting tonight is for the OSA Board of Directors to meet with each other and to conduct school business, as well as to receive input from the school staff and the community via public comment. Now, public comment may be made on topics that relate to the school. Comment on non-agenda items may be made at the end of the meeting. And for agenda items, after a hearing report, members of the public will have the opportunity to offer comments in a designated time prior to the board discussion of that agenda item. Outside of public comment, members of the public are also welcome to just generally observe this meeting. Now, we will ask that you please use the raise hand function to make any public comment or to request an opportunity to speak during public comment. If you cannot use the raised hand function on Zoom, you can sign up for public comment in the chat. We all want to be sure to see all requests for public comment. So keeping the chat clear when public comment signups are being called for would be greatly appreciated. You may also sign up for public comment at any time prior to the conclusion of public comment for that particular agenda item. You do not need to wait for the item to be called to sign up. And you also may sign up for public comment during the actual presentation or report for that item. Importantly, you are not required to include your name with the comment. If you wish to remain anonymous, and just for the ease of identifying speakers, you can provide a unique and appropriate pseudonym if you so choose. Now, importantly, due to student and employee privacy laws, please refrain from using the name or information that could easily identify any student or employee. Please note that public comment will be capped at 90 seconds or 1 minute and a half per speaker. In order to be sure that we hear from a variety of folks tonight, minutes cannot be transferred or given to other speakers. Also, please note that the board cannot, by law, respond to public comment on non-agenda items, but this does not mean that the board is not listening. You'll also notice, as it is now, that the chat function will be turned on for the duration of the meeting. Now, OSA is not required to allow or to open this chat function to remain open, but it has elected to do so this evening. If the chat becomes inappropriate, harassing, or otherwise disrupts the ongoing nature of the meeting, or otherwise discloses private information, OSA will, at its discretion, and in part based on my recommendation, will disable the chat feature. Until that time, staff will do its best to respond to chat comments throughout the meeting, but please note that it may not be able to get to every single comment. Again, if the thread becomes harassing or abusive or includes private information, the name of any individual, the staff reserves the right to turn off the chat feature for the rest of the meeting. OSA strives to be a learning community that learns from each other. And OSA is also a community comprised of people who care very deeply about the school. Now, we recognize that all voices are not treated equally in our society, but aim to value and respect all voices equally in this forum tonight. Now, we may have different ideas of how to achieve goals, and we may feel passionately about our points of view, but this discussion and chat feature needs to be a safe place for a variety of opinions. And finally, we must address each other in a respectful manner to foster collaboration, build community, and to model good citizenship to our students. Now, for clarification on the recording, board members, please remember to state your name prior to speaking. And for everyone, please note that the meeting is being recorded and the audio will also be posted on the school website. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. And I want to clarify that there are several sections of public comment for this meeting. We have a 3-minute section that is just on the consent agenda for this evening. Then during the main presentation, we will have 2 separate question and answer periods. The first one is 15 minutes and the second one is 20 minutes. So, and then at the very end of the meeting, we will have another public comment period that is for non-agenda items. And we also had a public comment section at the very beginning of the closed session meeting for this agenda. So we're going to move on now to the consent agenda part item. So we have 2 resolutions on the consent agenda. And before we take them up for a vote, we have a 3-minute public comment section on the consent agenda. So do we have anybody for public comment on the consent agenda? Maybe just type your name in the chat if you want to make a comment on the consent agenda. Daz, would you like to make a comment on the public? You don't have to actually, you can comment because you're on the board.
Sounds good.
I was just wondering like what specifically was detailed in the consent agenda.
Sure. So the consent agenda, those items are included in the agenda package, but there's a resolution that allows us to continue to meet virtually, given that we're still under a declaration of state emergency. That's a kind of an amendment to the Brown Act. And then there is also minutes that are to be approved from the September 23rd meeting of the board. So those 2 items.
Thank you.
Anybody else for public comment on the consent agenda?
I see Karen and Maury.
Okay.
I'm not on those 2 items. I'm on the first public comment.
You're not on this item. Okay, Maury, are you on this item?
No.
Okay, great. All right, so then board members, I need a motion to pass the consent agenda or if there's discussion about the consent agenda.
So moved.
Thank you, Steve. I need a second.
Second.
Thank you, Eileen. So we'll do a roll call vote. Adrian Barnes?
Yes.
Thank you. Steve Borg?
Yes.
Thank you. Wylene Huber?
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman? Okay, we'll come back to Jason in a minute. Dwayne Walton?
Yes.
Okay, and I vote yes as well. So that consent agenda passes. So we're going to turn it over now to Lisa Sherman-Colt to get us started. And also let me again reintroduce Beth Roy. She will be facilitating the question answer section of our agenda today. So go ahead and start the presentation, Lisa.
Good evening. I want to begin my remarks by thanking everyone for their calls and their emails. I appreciate hearing from our families, even though at times our dialogue has been tense. This has been a stressful 2 weeks for OSA, and I want to reiterate my commitment to be responsive to the number of voices affected by the events of the walkout. Tonight, you're going to hear from members of our leadership team about the events of last week, the comprehensive review of existing policies and procedures that we are planning, and a status report on where things stand right now. Most importantly, you're going to hear about how OSA intends to support our students and the greater community using a team of experts in the field of sexual trauma. You will also hear about the outside consultants we are partnering with and the investigator the school has hired to review the allegations that have been presented by our students. We are committed to accountability, but it will take some time. I want to make clear that I am personally committed, as is the entire faculty and staff, to taking whatever steps are needed to repair the damage that has been already done and begin the healing process necessary to get back to the important business of educating our children as students and artists. We have a long road ahead, but I view tonight as an important step in that process. I'd like to now turn things over to our JEDI coordinator, Kayla Stepter.
Hello, everybody. Good evening. I've been asked to talk a little bit about the complexity of this situation, the intersectionality that has occurred, and just like all these different dynamics. And as I was thinking about what I would say for this part, I really was at a loss because I think that this language sounds very academic. It sounds very sterile and does not completely capture what has happened. So I just wanted to take a moment to talk about some of the things that I have witnessed as a new person to OSA, going through this experience, to just provide a bit of clarity about what I've witnessed. I was able to go to most of the walkout and witnessed maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours of students speaking on sexual misconduct and abuse that they've experienced in their lives. Situations that have happened at OSA or with students at OSA, but others that have happened outside. And I think that speaks to, yes, a culture at OSA, but also a culture, our greater culture of allowing sexual violence to happen in communities. This is something that is inexcusable, needs to be addressed, and it will consistently be something that we need to work on. I have also had students come to me personally, emboldened by this walkout, to report their own abuse to me personally, and have seen support from their friends as they come forward. I think that support and that bravery is incredible on so many different levels. I've also seen calls to action. Some of those calls to action have been calls to ostracize and quote unquote, make abusers' lives a living hell. And I've seen people accused come to me scared and terrified and frustrated that they're unable to access their education. And I've been in rooms with students who have stepped forward, who have been scared and terrified and frustrated that they feel that they're unable to access their education. I've talked to lots of parents as well, who are worried for their children, who feel that their children are not safe for a myriad of reasons, for things that are happening in person, things that are happening through text message and phone, and things that are happening over social media. There are certainly elements, there are definitely elements of race happening here. There are the elements of gender happening here. There's elements of sexuality happening here. And I failed to mention the struggle and the hurt happening with staff who are also fearful and also confused and also trying to understand this and also trying to hold their students while holding themselves as well. It is what has happened here is incredible. I think that with all the dynamics that are going on, complexity is not a big enough word. And it is difficult to hold all of the narratives. It's difficult to hold all of the perspectives, especially when safety is the concern, the safety of your children, the safety of your students, the safety, your own personal safety are all top priority. But I encourage you all to work to hold all of them, because this is a matter of life. This is a matter of mental health. This is a matter of education. And this is a matter of the future of our students, of our children, your children. And I think all of these narratives are necessary to hold. And it will take great strength to hold. We can't hold it without each other. So I just wanted to speak on that part before we move forward to talk more about next steps and what all plans we have made. I think that part has not yet been said, but is necessary.
And I think that it's Mike who's going to speak next to those questions.
Yeah, and I know we have a slideshow, but I like this personally, if you guys are okay not projecting the slideshow, it's up to the team. Kayla, thank you. Kayla's been with us since June, and I've been working with you a lot recently. I really appreciate you and how quickly you've had this place become, you know, a full understanding, and your heart is fully in it. Much appreciation. My job right now in presenting to everyone here, 164 people, I'm grateful you're all here. I wish it was under different circumstances, but I'm grateful to see this type of engagement in this important moment. My duty here is to provide you guys with an overview kind of what's happened so we can make sure that we have a shared understanding, and then also share with you some of the immediate responses that OSA has and is doing. And then part two, we'll get into the depths of kind of the long-term planning associated with this. So first, I just want to share that the walkout itself was organized by the Student Safety Committee. When they were organizing the walkout, we established a timeline. The timeline was that they would do the walkout on the 30th of September. A week later, they would present their list of demands to the administration and the teachers on October 6th. And then there would be a collaborative period over 2 weeks where me and other administrators would work with the Student Safety Committee up to the point on October 20th where we would respond to the list of demands. And what I want to share with you on that is, even though many other things have happened, not entirely as planned, that timeline is in place. And this is really a beautiful process for the list of demands is policy driven, and it's a very reasonable list of demands. And we're adhering to that timeline and doing our best to not let all the other kind of responsibilities that have popped up interfere with the fact that there's really important work to be done with those students. I met with them yesterday. I will meet with them again tomorrow. And that's been a very important process and a healthy process, in my opinion. In terms of the immediate impact of the walkout, this is kind of an overview of some of the things that were felt on campus. Many students felt supported by the Student Safety Committee in telling their own stories of sexual harm. I think everyone was surprised, the committee themselves, I know I was surprised by the number of people that lined up and wanted to share their stories. It's very complicated. They need a place to share their stories. So this is one of the things we need to work on, is figuring out how to make sure all those stories are told. Because there was frustration from students when I ended the walkout early. And I understand that there's that frustration, and I want to make sure that I support the students who did not have an opportunity to share their stories. There's a sense from students that the reports of sexual misconduct, which were made prior to COVID-19, have gone ignored and unaddressed by the school. That was a shared kind of feeling after the walkout. Anonymous student calls to take action have been made against alleged and rumored perpetrators through social media. instances of social ostracization on campus against alleged and rumored perpetrators. There's been a range of disciplinary situations on Tuesday, October 7th, leading to multiple suspensions. As a school, we don't believe philosophically the suspension is the best line of redirecting student behavior. We were in a bit of a crisis moment where student safety took paramount there, and there were suspensions for harm, harassment, and for cyberbullying. We quickly recognized, well, let me move on now to the actual immediate response by OSA. And the first thing was recognizing this is a big situation. The magnitude of this was significant. I immediately put feelers out. Then the name Rebecca Levinson, which we'll come back to in a minute, came my way, and I emailed her immediately. This was on Friday, right after the walkout. And she invited me in her home, and that kind of led to a bunch of other things that have happened since. More on that in a minute. But we need external expertise. That includes Beth Roy here facilitating. Hi, Beth. Nice to see you again. It includes other experts that were coming in to support our teachers. There's trainings that need to happen. There's restorative justice that needs to happen in many different levels. RJOY is the organization in Oakland that all fingers point to say they are the ones you want to bring in. We met with them today. We're working on trying to develop a contract with them. An organization called Humming Your Truth, an organization called the Ahisma Collective, and also with Bay War, which we have a previous relationship with, Bay Area Women Against Rape. What's been beautiful in all those partnerships is seeing how quickly people want to work with OSA and how many connections we already have with the people within them. We met with COSATS reps and I met with COSATS reps and the APT president to discuss the closure of school. We needed to close school and get everyone on the same page and have some really important discussions the Monday afterward. We had grade level gatherings the next day. These were not designed to be something that was going to solve all problems. It was so important to have FaceTime to every one of our students. For me, it was important that I could look every student in the eyes after what had been happening, and also to just provide general misconduct reporting information. We received support from legal counsel and initiated a comprehensive review of all of our policies and procedures. This includes identifying an external investigator. And then we started working with our students who have been returning from suspension, re-entry meetings to go over all the safety concerns and make sure that students have what they need in terms of safety plans and conduct agreements as they return. So I'd like to go back to Rebecca because I want her to have an opportunity to introduce herself. She has been a real savior over these past couple of weeks as she has spent 30 years supporting youth who have faced sexual harm, and she's just been a true asset to us. She can fill in some more of the details.
Thanks, Mike. I'm also a parent at OSA. So my eighth grader, Eva, is in your midst. And one thing that Mike hasn't mentioned is, yes, I've been working in the area of domestic violence, sexual harm, et cetera, for my entire career. But some of you may have come across me because of this little organization called Berkeley High School Stop Harassing, which is a grassroots organization in Berkeley that has been holding BUSD accountable for issues of Title IX violation, which is what we're talking about today, whether it's sexual harm, bullying, et cetera, and holding them accountable. So when Mike gave me that email on Friday, I mean, basically he was saying, open mouth of lion, let me put my head in there, because literally we have brought more civil rights cases, independent legal actions against BUSD than any organization you could imagine. I just had four girls in my house this last board meeting, sharing their stories of how BUSD doesn't take care of them and their miserable processes. So why am I here tonight talking to you? Because when Mike came to my kitchen on Sunday after the walkout and he said, Rebecca, I don't want the school to be a school anymore if we can't keep students safe and we can't fix this. I don't want that to happen. I care so much about the real sexual harms of students. I care so much about the realities that happen that Kayla so beautifully described, those complexities, right? The harm that happened there as well. And he said, I want to fix it. Now, for someone who is an advocate and has worked in the field for 30 years, that's the phone call you're waiting for. You really want to fix this? You do? You really want me to help you understand all of the problems that are there, help you hold students, help you think about your systems? I cleared my calendar and I kind of moved in. And I had never met Mike before. I'd never met any administrators before because my time was so involved with Berkeley High School and it has been for 7 years. That's where I put all my civic engagement. But something extraordinary exists in our midst, and that is the faculty that are holding our students. And I know that there are a lot of parents that are deeply concerned and deeply worried. And I have got to tell you, in my professional life, I have never seen a response like this. I have never seen, you know, emails coming in at 1:30 in the morning because we were going to try to figure out what to do with that kid, that client, that next thing, parents being held, all of these things. And so it was an honor to spend so much time really digging into what the problems were and having a system that is clearly committed to addressing them and addressing them in the most equitable, meaningful way. You know, there was not one moment where folks weren't thinking about, we have to be engaged in a restorative practice because students are going to be seeing each other in the hallways and they're going to be seeing each other in performances. And we need to figure out how to move forward and how to hold all of the different kinds of pain that came up as a result of both women and folks sharing their experiences of sexual harm on the walkouts, but also the students that experienced, you know, situations where there was bullying and other kinds of targeting that was not, was also not okay. And how do you hold both of those things, because both of those things are real? And I do think that part of what I'm hoping to do with my comments this evening is to bring us some hope, because I think that there's so much swirling and misinformation. There was something really lovely about having an opportunity to see it and touch it, because you get a sense of, oh, the whole sort of vibe of the school has shifted so dramatically. And that doesn't mean things are fixed. That doesn't mean things that aren't in place. But as an outsider who had the opportunity to come in and provide support and help, Oakland School for the Arts has it, I have to say, pretty much all over BUSD for what it's worth. So I just wanted to share a little bit about my insight. And I wouldn't have done this if I didn't really believe that this institution was committed to making change. And this is not how it usually happens in school districts. It's usually the opposite. It's litigious, it's denying, it's glossing over. And what this school said is, come look underneath every single curtain, rug, whatever, and let's figure out all the problems so we can move forward. So those were my thoughts I wanted to share.
Thank you, Rebecca. I just want to echo that with the little bit of work I've been able to do with OSA in the past, that I too am convinced that this is an unusual organization and group of people really dedicated to change. So I think we're next going to hear from Jason. Is that right? Have I got that wrong?
That's right. Good evening.
Okay.
My name is Jason Miller. I'm with the offices of Young Minion Corps. And I have a unique relationship with OSA, in that I was actually a founding faculty member there at OSA. I was a teacher and an administrator. I've been representing charter schools for about 6 years now. So I know OSA very well. I know the history of OSA, and OSA is very well in my heart. And I'm honored to be supporting OSA at this very difficult time. I first learned of the incidents that were going on last Sunday night, or I'm sorry, the Sunday after the event, so two Sundays ago now. And I've been working closely with staff to ensure that all aspects of this extremely complicated matter and that are done properly, and that the rights of all students are carefully considered. And what we have recommended, and the school has decided to go with, and Dave, we can go to the next slide on this, is bringing in an independent outside investigator to investigate all of the claims made through the various processes, both at the demonstration itself and in the time since the demonstration. One thing that's been very difficult so far to investigate is, I think, because of the nature of the accusations, they have been not specific enough to open official investigations into. So I want to make sure that everybody on the parents and students understand what has to be done in order for us to begin to investigate something. There are three different models of investigation, but I don't want to cloud that and make it more difficult. That's something that that the investigator and I are going to have to deal with. But just so you know them, one is called a Title IX investigation. And that is the focus of probably what we're going to be dealing with for the most part of the allegations made at the meeting demonstration on September 30th. Also is a process called the UCP, and one that's just regular statutory investigations. And we'll determine which kind of investigation needs to happen based on the facts of each case. But it's critical that students know that the accusations, these complaints need to be made specifically, and they need to be made specifically to school staff. They need to be made in writing. My understanding is that at this point, those complaints are getting made to Mrs. Odd, and the forms for those complaints will be available both in her office, and we're also going to make sure that it's available on the website as well. Staff has heard, and with our consultation, determined that there is some sense of mistrust between some students and some parents and some of the site administration. So we're offering at this point that while all complaints do need to be submitted to school staff, they can be submitted sealed in a sealed envelope. School staff will then just date stamp them and then send them straight to our office for analysis. Looking at those, depending on what law governs and the complexity of the allegation, either we can take care of it, we'll direct it back to the school to take care of the investigations, our office can do the investigations, or we've also identified an external investigator that this is just what they do, that are gonna be handling them because of the scope and the gravity of many things that have been said. Next slide. Oracle Investigations is the group that we have contracted with to do this investigation, specifically the investigator we're working with. I'm thrilled to be working with on this is Simone Mueller. She's been working on investigations of this sort for more than 25 years. Our firm has worked with her many times and had very good results. Her expertise is in Title IX and in both criminal and civil sexual harassment and abuse cases. She is certified by the American Title IX Association as a civil rights investigator all the way through level 4, and also as a K-12 investigator and decision maker. So she has a lot of experience working in sexual harassment and sexual abuse cases in the K-12 public education sphere. We've had nothing but great results in the past with her, and we're anticipating that's going to be the case here as well. And Beth, that is all I have for right now.
Okay. And is Simone here? Was Simone going to say a word or introduce herself?
Oh, Simone is not here tonight. No.
Oh, she's not. Okay. So then I think we're at the moment for public commentary for Q&A. So let's see. Rebecca, do you have more that you wanted to say at this point, or should we move on?
No, I didn't quite understand how it was going to be laid out exactly tonight. So I've already, please give my time okay. to others. Thank you.
Sure. So Karen Morfin is first. So Karen, yes. Before you go, actually, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I had meant just to make a couple of comments about what facilitation means. I've been asked to facilitate this particular meeting, of course, because there's a lot of intensity and a lot of emotion. So what I want is to ask your permission. Karen, maybe as the first person speaking, you can be the spokesperson for the group to facilitate for safety here and for spaciousness. So as many people as possible have a chance to speak, and that people speak in a way that models cooperation, consent, respect, the kinds of values that we've been talking about and that are involved in these issues of sexual assault. So I may interrupt you. I may ask you to say things in a different way. I could, in an extreme moment, which I am anticipating will not occur here, because I know this community is a community that is respectful and dedicated to the common good, could just cut you off. But I, as I said, I hope that won't happen, and I don't expect it to. So with permission to facilitate, let's start the clock running, Karen, for you.
Hi, given the 90-second rule, I'm going to go ahead and read what I prepare. On a recent communication from the executive director, Lisa Sherman-Cold, it was mentioned that the accused are Black cisgender boys. The APT is aware that and strongly condemns the racist disciplinary treatment of Black boys in schools across the US. However, we are concerned that this communication neglected to mention that the vast majority of school safety community and those who share harms are Black and brown girls. This communication creates a false choice of either being with the boys or being with the girls and their supporters. This language is also harmful to a Black community. It is not neutral and it does not reflect an equitable lens. We believe that it's imperative that there must be a nuanced and expert lens on race as well as misogyny in discussing this situation. I'm also concerned that this communication created fear of retaliation by guiltiness by association of our Black families. Families who have Black male presenting teens are worried for their children and that they feel that the school has labeled them as offenders. I understand this may not have been the intention of the communication. However, regardless of the intention, it created harm. And we need to make a path going forward. I also would like to encourage everyone in this meeting to clarify who the ombudsman person is for the school and send it in a communication to all families as part of your Title IX adjustments that you're doing. Title IX and ombudsman person needs to be publicly communicated. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Karen. Paulina, are you still wanting to talk?
Did you say Paulina?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I did. So I'm gonna, I don't know why there's two lawyers here, but I would like to know why, because that feels really silencing, at least for me. I'm just gonna talk for myself. So my son was very supportive of the Student Safety Committee. He went to the rally. He joined the Student Safety Committee on Friday. And on Tuesday, he was physically assaulted in the hallways. He has bruises on his neck. And now we're dealing with potential PTSD. So I don't know if any of the board members or others can imagine what it's like to get a text from your son at 10 o'clock in the morning saying, come pick me up, it's urgent. It's urgent. And then having to go and not hearing from the school at all for a week until I brought it up to a board member. Nobody called to see how he was doing. Nobody called to ask when he was going to come back to school and how they could support him. Nobody. So this idea that, you know, we're a great group of people, I know the parents group of people, but I don't have a lot of trust in the administration when I can't even get a phone call to ask how my son is doing. We heard from Mr. Oz about students being afraid that they can't access their education. My son hasn't been in school for over a week because he's scared that he will get assaulted again. You mentioned wanting to look people in the eye, Mr. Oz. You haven't looked my son in the eye after what happened to him. So I don't find that to be really honest.
I hate to cut you off. I know this is really emotional, and I think you should have at least 15 more seconds, but your time is up. So do you want to just wind up what you have to say so we can go on?
Yeah, so I'll mention one more thing, which is communication. From Lisa mentions the greatest challenge in this crisis currently is misinformation in social media. I would argue that the greatest crisis is sexual assault and the young women who are dealing with that and a physical assault. It's a very real issue that social media requires attention, sensitivity, and strategy. This comment struck me and some of us as blaming students who were harmed and shaming them who were harmed. As a survivor of sexual assault myself, that kind of damage lasts a really long time when you're shamed and blamed. So That's it, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Bright Star, you're next on the list.
Good evening. Thank you. I am a mother of a senior, a young Black man at OSA, and my heart really goes out to everyone who has experienced assault as a person with many loved ones who have experienced assault. I know just how painful it is and how long it takes to heal. I do wanna say, having had students at other high schools in Oakland, the response from the teachers, the board, OSA leadership, as a parent from where I stand, has felt markedly different and way, way better than I experienced anywhere else. So I just want to express my gratitude to the folks that have stepped forward to really take this issue seriously. And I really do believe, having had experiences in other schools, that we really do have a precious gift at OSA. And I really want us as a community to get through this difficult moment where everyone can feel that their voices and concerns are addressed. I am concerned that we make sure that we have supportive services, therapeutic supports available for the young women who have experienced assaults, and that our greatest priority should be ensuring that they feel safe and that they feel supported. I also am really concerned about rumors, and I think we really need to adhere to the formal process of submitting a complaint, and we need that process to be serious, and we need the follow-up on it. But we also need to make sure that privacy protections and due process protections are adhered to. It's particularly important for young Black men. And I think it's also critical for those who've experienced assault as well as the accused.
Star, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that is your time. Yes. Melinda?
Thank you, Beth. Yes. Hi, I'm Melinda De Jesus, co-chair of APT this year. I have two children at OSA right now. Just want to say, first of all, that it's very upsetting to me that this has taken 2 weeks after the walkout that we finally had a community town hall. And I'm really hoping that we could have like kind of faster, more agile response. I have just two questions. How will OSA leadership begin to repair trust with all OSA students in the aftermath of what's just happened? And secondly, what kind of intentional and intersectional processes will OSA leadership be employing to combat rape culture and misogyny in this community? As a survivor myself, this has been incredibly triggering, and it's pretty much triggered my own children. So I really need to see a much faster, fiercer, more intersectional response to these issues. Thank you.
Yes. Ashley Cooper.
Hi, yes. I am a mother of an eighth grader, and I also belong to the OSA Anti-Racist Education and Activism Parent Group. And we as a collective, of course, I appreciate all the things that Kayla and Rebecca, and going off of what Karen Morfin was saying as well. But we just wanted to make a statement, and we can post it in the chat as well if I don't get through in 90 seconds. We recognize that within a male-dominated white supremacist society, gender and racial harm often go unacknowledged, dismissed, and are poorly dealt with. In this time at OSA, we as a community have an opportunity to support the healing and accountability for the students at OSA who have experienced sexual harm, with negating the racial harm that has been impacting many students at OSA in the aftermath of the walkout. We are a resourceful community, and we owe it to our children of our school and community to do better. We honor the courage and necessity of the students at OSA who came together to support each other and spoke out about their experiences of sexual violence. The walkout was a powerful act, and we commend every student for speaking up and speaking out. for creating a space of support and care for each other and for demanding justice when they were not receiving it. We are inspired by the strength of these brave students in demanding their voices to be heard, especially girls of color whose experiences of violence and sexual trauma are continually ignored in our society. At the same time, we must also acknowledge and condemn the fact that many students have called Black boys at OSA rapists in the aftermath of the student walkout, regardless of their involvement with any accusation or not. We must understand that this is an extraordinary grave and inflammatory label to put on a Black boy in a society which has repeatedly even murdered Black boys and men over such allegations. African-American boys at OSA are being traumatized by repeated accusations, bullying, and harassment, whether or not there is any evidence suggesting they have done anything wrong and without due process. These are students. Okay, yeah. We also had some questions, but a lot of them, it sounds like, are being addressed, and I appreciate that. Okay. And we just want you to know that we are a community that we just want to make this better for everyone, for all of our students. So thank you.
If you have remaining questions, you might put them in the chat.
Yes.
Okay. Because we'll have another section. It'll be another opportunity to address them.
Thank you, Beth.
Maury.
Hi, everyone. I apologize for being off screen. I'm having technology issues. I'm Maury. I'm the co-president of the PTA. I just want to acknowledge that how jarring and alienating it was to have a lawyer opening this meeting without any explanation to the community that has been here for now 6 years, many of us. And I'd love to hear more about why that decision was made. I've never seen it before, and many of us were really stunned by that. I think the challenge moving forward is transparency and making sure we see a plan that I think is probably full of great resources and great expertise, but really sharing that with community and also seeing some reflection on this didn't all start the day of the walkout. Things were building up. Where were mistakes made? Where were there not mistakes made? I'm curious to learn more about that, and I'm hoping that this investigation will turn up some of that so we can learn from this. I want to acknowledge everyone's pain at this school right now. I see it in my own child. And I want to urge people to be careful of, I suppose, what I've seen in parents as I serve in this role is when one group talks about the boys in this situation, the other group feels the girls are left out and not seen as Black and brown girls. So I'm looking for someone who can help us bridge that tension and have everyone be treated equitably and fairly in this and not see it as a fight one against the other. Thank you.
Thank you, Maury. I want to just put in a word of recommendation for RJOI. I know they do wonderful work using restorative justice approaches, which is, I think, exactly what's called for here. Brooke Cartellano. Brooke, you're muted.
Hi. There Sorry. You go. Thank you. Hi, I'm the mother of a seventh grader in visual art at OSA, as well as a member of the APT. A feature of strong leadership includes owning up to harm caused rather than focusing on the intention of the party that did the harming. Accountability can be achieved by taking ownership when mistakes have been made, and our students deserve to see their administrators acknowledge any missteps in how allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault were addressed. Can the leadership let us know prior to the walkout what could have happened to attend the concerns of sexual harm more proactively? How will any of these realizations be reflected in the new plan? In addition, in regards to what was shared by OSA's legal counsel, I have a few questions. What does he mean by not specific enough to investigate? Who decides that? And is the burden put on the students to know how to report, or will a case manager assist them? Why do they have to be submitted in writing? Is it possible that a staff member can write down a verbal report from a student? And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. I think this is a place to pause with the public commentary and go to some of the answers to the questions you just posed, Brooke. That's a good segue to the next section, which is to talk about interim and long-term plan. And I think that's going to be introduced by Mike. So Mike, you want to take it from here?
Well, we actually need the slideshow and it's actually going to be introduced by Kayla. I'm happy to do it.
Okay.
Kayla would prefer, but we had discussed that she would be introducing.
Now, I'm totally in your hands.
You there, Kayla?
So Kayla?
I'm here. We can go to the next slide. So as you guys have said, there's just like lots of ways that need to, like lots of stakeholders, lots of kids, lots of community members that need to receive supports and that we, so we can engage in healing as a community. I'm gonna talk about what that looks like for students. I'm gonna look like what that's gonna look like for staff members and what that's gonna look like for family members as well, okay? I wanna say now that this is the beginnings of our work. And one of my roles in this is not necessarily to claim expertise in sexual violence prevention or cyberbullying or anything like that, but to coordinate and identify those experts and to make sure that they're in place so that we can have the proper intervention. So in my mind, I looked at this as three different tiers of intervention, tier one, tier two, and tier three. If you're familiar with just like special education and RTI services, you'll kind of recognize this. Tier one is going to be is universal. What is there for everybody? Tier two is more targeted supports. And what I'm thinking about when I'm talking about tier two is students who are in crisis, maybe students who are not directly impacted by events before the walkout, during or after the walkout, but might have residual feelings residual feelings, whether that be that they've had an experience of abuse that is now coming back. Oh, excuse me.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Whether they have experienced abuse or whether they are whether they're feeling something based off of their off of friends or whatever. And then finally, we have this group that like were very directly impacted by the walkout. That is students who are survivors. That is students who are who've been accused, and that is also students who have engaged in cyberbullying, sending memes, sending text messages, all the things that have happened in the meantime. And so, some of the things that we're going to do on each of those tiers, I'll walk through that quickly. For tier one, we're going to be capitalizing on advisory as a learning and community space. So one of the things that I've noticed is that we have like a health class that happens in ninth grade, but that is not enough as far as like sexual education health, firstly. Secondly, when we talk about traditional sex ed, we're thinking about like body parts and understanding like the dynamics of sex and things like that, but it doesn't always cover things like consent or intimate partner violence or pod mapping and things of that nature. So our goal is going to be to, in the long run, just revamp our sex ed class or our health class, but also to make it so that we are teaching these things in an age appropriate way for middle schoolers and for high schoolers during advisory. During that time, we can also look at things such as cyberbullying. We can talk about sexual harassment. What are our school policy? What resources do you have and things of that nature? And then additionally, I think that there is a need for an understanding of what our school conduct is. How do we behave to one another? How do we show respect? How do we allow for justice to happen? So we're going to be doing all of those things. And additionally, looking at our policies and procedures. I'll speak a little bit more about this later, but our policies and procedures need to be revamped. And as opposed to having one person work on it, think on it, and then come up with some kind of catch-all, instead what we're going to look to do is to identify students and other community members who are passionate about some of these topics that would like to contribute. As our tier two, for students who are in crisis, we have a mental health and wellness team that I think was a failure on our part not to mobilize them before, as we knew that the walkout was approaching. We're not gonna continue to make that mistake. So we have been meeting to talk about what that looks like we're going to be meeting to talk about what that looks like and how they how this team of people can wrap their arms around all of our students, specifically the ones who express the need. Because again, as I said before, this has brought up all types of concerns about mental health. Mental health and wellness. So what we're going to do is we're going to increase the number of drop-in hours and to also hopefully make some available during class. Now that's going to take some coordinating with teachers and things like that, which is why it has not been implemented yet. We're also going to be making sure that there are clear processes for students so that they know who they need to go to, or if teachers or staff members recognize a need, whether that be they're recognizing that a student has a behavior change, or that student has been very down, or just like changed in the way that they have behaving, that they know what to do as well. And another thing that was pitched that I really like the idea of is having 6-week interventions in which students are learning very deliberately about how to manage their own mental health and how to acquire help. And finally, the most direct and probably what we're going to speak the most about is like for those who are directly impacted. We have a huge need for restorative justice. We need to learn about what restorative justice is, this idea of identifying harm and healing from it. All right. And having that for folks who have been hurt, having that for folks who have done harm themselves as well. And so what we are going to be doing is really diving into or really connecting with lots of external partners who do this work. May I have the next slide, please? Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to quickly just give an idea of who the folks who are on the who are supports for students. On the left side, you have our health and wellness team. I'm going to give you guys a moment to, if you want to write these, take a screenshot, take a picture, write the down emails, you can. So our health and wellness team is on the left, led by Maya Levine. And on the right side is the student support team, which includes myself, the JEDI coordinator, Anna DeRoos, the dean of the school, Wendy Snyder, and Arlyle Schultz, who are both counselors, Sarah Ordaz, who is our SPED coordinator, and Katie Zog, who is our assistant principal. All of the folks here are mandated reporters, which means that if a student reports abuse, neglect, or anything like that, then we have to report it. Let's give it like 5 more seconds so folks can write that down.
Kella, while people are taking note of this, I'm doing a time check here. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to allow sufficient time for more public comments, I wonder whether we run over or we shorten this presentation, or how do we balance the need for information with the need for public space to speak?
Are you asking me?
Well, I'm asking whoever would like to weigh in about that. Josefina, perhaps we need your voice here.
Yes, Kayla, yes. I think we need to accelerate the presentation so we can get to the public comment.
I think it's important. Are people willing to go over time?
Beth, we have a couple of experts that have joined us as guests. I would love if the team's comfortable hearing from them. I want to make sure we're honoring their time and also introducing them to our community.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Mike, I also think it's really important to address particularly the question that's been raised a couple of times about the presence of the lawyers when we're talking about outside people, mm-hmm. because I think it does add to anxiety and mystification. So if somebody would like to take that piece of it too.
I don't think that I'm the person to respond to that. But someone should, absolutely. I can move forward and I will try to pick us up a little bit. I apologize. Okay.
Thanks. For moving no apology needed. There's a lot. This is really too short a time. Mm-hmm. You know, we need way more time, and there will be more time going forward for more of this. But for tonight, it's rushed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Would you mind going to the next slide, please? These are the folks who are going to be working with our students who I think require intensive supports. Ms. Roy, you spoke about RJoy at a point. Our Joy is going to be an organization. We actually met with them today to talk about providing specified supports to all of our students in small groups, looking at harm, looking at how you heal from harm, looking at how, if you caused harm, how do you right the wrong? And how do we make sure that our community stays a community without throwing people out? The next person that we have, or the next organization that we're working with, is an organization called Ahimsa Collective, who does something similar. Because we have so many stakeholders in this, I think it'll be important to have as many folks as possible. Folks from Ahimsa have offered us some services for free. And so we want to capitalize on that as well. We also have Kendall Roberts. And let me see if Kendall is here.
I'm here.
Yes, okay. I want to let you go ahead and introduce yourself. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kendall Roberts. A little bit about myself. I have been supporting youth that have experienced commercial sexual exploitation, as well as gender-based violence, providing healing circles, coaching, restorative justice, and one-on-one counseling. And so I'm happy to be here to support OSA's student body and parents.
Thank you so much. Kendall has been so helpful already, and we are just meeting, so I'm excited to continue working with her. Can we go to the next slide, please? We can actually kind of just run through it. So we think that we're going to be passing out this slideshow, so I wanted to make sure just have a bio slash a synopsis of each organization. So there's one for Arjoy. We can go to the next slide. Ahimsa, the person here is Nuri Nusrat. They are a facilitator who does this work through Ahimsa and has been highly recommended from a number of different sources. You can go to the next slide. And then Kendall here, who just spoke. Can we go to the next slide, please? All right, staff supports. First off, there has been a lot of harm that has happened, and our staff as well. Folks are hurting all over. And so we are going to be working on doing some restorative justice and some healing circles with our staff as well. I'm going to employ Kendall for some of that, but also Annette Oropeza. If Annette, if you're there, would you mind unmuting to introduce yourself?
Okay, I don't know if you can see me, but my name is Annette Oropeza. I've worked for the Oakland Unified School District for over 20 years, working on a restorative justice, sexual harassment training for students. I've worked intensively with families, coordinated multicultural activities, crisis intervention, trauma-informed care, cultural competency, a lot of the issues we're going to deal with here. And just going to be a support to Kayla and the staff as you work through this. Oh, I also want to mention that I have a daughter who was a former student at OSA, and my husband was also on the faculty at OSA. So I have a lot of connections there, from the past, and just want to support the school in any way I can. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, so my background is in therapy as a therapist, but school social work in general is where I can provide consultation.
Thank you so much. Annette has also been great. She actually joined us in our last PD session as we heard about some of the needs that our staff needs as far as healing themselves, but also what kind of training they need. We're gonna be working to make sure there's historical context given, especially considering all the intersectional identities that are coming into play here and all the many different dynamics that are going to play here. We're gonna be talking about restorative justice and how restorative justice can be implemented at our school. We'll talk about sexual violence prevention and response, classroom management, family engagement, and more. And as I mentioned before, we're gonna be working to make sure that our policies are up to par and that they are not just created by one person, but that there's buy-in from the community and that there's continuous feedback loops so that we can continue to unpack where things that might become outdated, even in the future. May we move forward? That is Annette's bio. If you guys are curious, when we pass out the slides, you'll get that. And next slide. Finally, we're going to talk a little bit about family supports. Everybody involved that I've spoken to has talked about how necessary it is to support not just the kids, but the adults. And so I'm going to employ all of them to help support families as well. We're going to be doing listening sessions and structured town hall meetings with administration so that we can kind of get to the bottom of all of this. With that being said, I know that this board meeting right now is not enough time. So it's very clear that we do need more time. This is a very, there's a lot to unpack here. So those things will be coming. Additionally, education, there's been a call for more training on how do you engage in these conversations with your children. And so we will be providing that as well. And then finally, engagement, making sure that folks who are willing and able to engage and to help rebuild our culture and rebuild our policies, that those folks are able to do so. And so we can go to the very last slide, or my very last slide at least. So there's a lot, we have a long-term plan, a short-term and a long-term plan. This is just the beginning. And we'll continue, we'll have to continue to grow. What we need is to continue to develop our community so we can manage conflict and tension. We need restorative justice in this situation, but in any other situation as well. We also need these facilitators and these external consultants to be a part of this for us. This work is incredibly important, as you all see. And what that's going to require is having the funding for it. And so I know I've talked to many different people all over the place about where monies and funding need to go. This is the time to start allocating a budget to restorative justice and to education as well. We have to strengthen our internal systems. And so that's what I'm aiming for us to do. I think that is it for me. And I thank you guys for your time.
Yes, thank you, Carla. In light of this, very thoughtful plan that you have in process and the emphasis on restorative justice, I want to go back to that question about lawyers, because the legal system tends not to be restorative, but rather punitive, retributive. So I wonder if somebody could on the other hand, you're dealing with issues that do engage, that cross these lines between the ideal way that you all as a community may want to handle them and the way they're handled out in the greater society, which is not very well. So I wonder whether somebody could speak to that question of why legal counsel needs to be present and part of this process.
Thank you, Beth. I want to ask Jason Miller to answer the question about what are the laws that require attorneys to be here? Why is the council here for the school?
Okay. Jason?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the question. First and foremost, there is no law that says that I need to be here for, or that any attorney needs to be here for this meeting. But this is a time of a great deal of complex issues are coming up. As almost everyone has addressed, there are a myriad of complications that are going on that involve lots and lots of legal structures and legal investigations. And I think it's imperative that that is transparent and that is focused, and that we are involved in the community conversations as facts are being gathered through this process. Due process rights exist for all students, and we need to make sure that we're monitoring that as well. And there was some concern because of the anonymous nature of the Zoom platform and the comments that there would be continued negativity going on there that could require legal oversight. So that's the purpose of why my colleague, Mr. Rudolph, is in the chat, is to keep track of that, to make sure that we are sufficiently protected from that regard. I also was informed by staff very early into this process that there is a need for an independent investigators being involved. And that is through our office that those independent investigators are being identified.